This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Summer Olympics are being held in Rio de Janeiro for 16 days next month, starting on August 5th. Not long after that, the Summer Paralympics, a multi-sport event for athletes with disabilities, will be held in Rio from September 7th through the 18th. The Real Abilities Film Festival is going to present The Crash Reel on July 28th at Kenwood Theater. The movie tells the dramatic story of snowboarder Kevin Pierce, who suffered a traumatic brain injury while training for the 2010 Olympics. And despite the concerns of his doctors and family, Kevin makes it a goal to get back to snowboarding. Joining us with a preview of the Paralympics and the Crash Reel are two local Paralympians, April Curley, who swam in the 2008 Paralympic Summer Games, and the founder of Cincinnati Dragons wheelchair basketball, Jacob Counts, who competed in the 2008 Paralympics on the U.S. National Wheelchair Basketball Team. Also from UC Health, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Neurosurgery, Dr. Ope Adeowe. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's good to see everybody this afternoon. Thank you so much for being here. And in April, most people might not be completely aware of what the Paralympic Games are. So let's begin by a little background on that. What are the Paralympic Games?
Sure. So the Paralympic Games are sports like the Olympics, but for people with disabilities, anywhere from people that might be wheelchair bound to people with cerebral palsy and also people that are missing limbs. It really is a wide spectrum of people with physical disabilities as well as some visual disabilities as well. And then depending on the sport, they have different disability classifications that allow them to compete against other people with similar disabilities. So for example, I was born without my right hand, but I don't compete against someone that's in a wheelchair. I'm going to compete against someone who's either missing a hand below the elbow or a leg. That's considered equivalent. So that's kind of how they break down the disability classifications and how people compete in the sports. Did you want to add anything, Jake?
No, I think that pretty much hits the nail on the head. As far as team sports goes, there's typically some type of a classification to allow a variety of disabilities on the court at the same time.
So you've got team sports like obviously basketball.
Basketball, quad rugby, I think are the two bigger team sports.
And as far as individual competitions, swimming, gymnastics, all the things that you would see at the Olympics?
Sure. So swimming, and I'm not sure about gymnastics, but there's definitely track and field, and then a wide range of both summer and winter game sports that accommodate people that are adaptive athletes.
And we've got the Paralympics coming up in Rio in September. So what should people look for at the Paralympics? Are there any particular athletes they should be keeping an eye on or events they should look out for?
Well, there's definitely a lot of people that they can look out for. Some of the stars would probably be considered like Jessica Long in swimming. She's one of the most decorated U.S. Paralympic swimmers. You'll probably have heard of Tatiana McFadden, who is in track and field events, and I believe she's even won the hand cycle at the Boston Marathon. So they're very decorated athletes across the board, and I couldn't even name them all, but really the best place to go and look for those is through the Team USA website, and there's a Paralympic section that speaks to both the Paralympic sports as well as the Olympic athletes that they can see there too. And one other thing I'd mention is that we're in the same exact venues as the Olympics, so when we talk about Rio, we're in the same athletic village. We're competing in the same venues. They just do them at separate times because they just can't accommodate the 4,000 athletes all at once and all of the sports teams and all of that.
4,000 athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And I think I heard it's 164 different countries take part in this. So.
Right. Yep.
So how did you get involved? Let's start with Jacob. How did you get involved in competing, and who led you to competing in the Paralympics?
I originally got involved in wheelchair basketball with a local team called the Cincinnati Slammers. And then from there, I played in college. And then at that point, I started getting invitations to tryouts to play for Team USA. Got cut my first couple times and had to keep working at it, and then ended up joining the team in 2007 and staying on it till 2010.
Uh-huh. What about you, April?
So really for me, my journey into swimming started at a very young age. At 6 years old, I started swimming. My mom never knew how to swim and wanted to make sure me and my brother both learned how to swim. And so I quickly took to the water and became competitive and started swimming with my local summer league team that then, you know, became the high school team. And then I went on to swim here in Cincinnati at Xavier University for a while. And all that time, I never even had Paralympics on the horizon. It was really, actually for me, the eye-opening experience was I wasn't sure I wanted – I didn't identify myself as disabled. And so taking on that label for me was at first a little bit uncomfortable. And what I learned immediately from joining Paralympics and going out for the team was that this was really about showcasing our capabilities and not our disabilities. And that became – part of the message I wanted to communicate to the public as well.
What's your fondest memories from competing in the Paralympics?
Well, a little story I'll share is that when we were in South Africa competing in the World Championships, the day after competition, we went down to the Indian Ocean. And we were on this beach, and they speak English, but they also speak Swahili down there. And the signs were in Swahili, so we couldn't read it. And we came down to the ocean, and we thought we had this beach all to ourselves. And so we all go running into the ocean. And, you know, people with missing legs, missing arms, right? And all of a sudden, this lifeguard comes running from across the beach saying, you need to get out. That's shark-infested waters. And so all these people come running out of the water, missing arms, missing legs. And I thought the lifeguard was going to have a heart attack. But that is one of those memories that we were all just kind of laughing and like, well, you know, it would have just changed our classification. Or, you know, like we kind of joked about it. But it's just one of those things you'll never forget that when you're in a group of people that are missing limbs and things like that, you kind of joke about it because you make light of the situation and the best of what you have. Because like I said, we're really focused on competing the same way anyone else is.
Okay. So I was going to ask you if it's any more challenging to compete as a Paralympian because of the disabilities, or if everybody just has this attitude of it is what it is, and I'm going to do the best that I can.
I think while it may be perceived as a challenge, when you take someone, at least from my own personal experience, it's like I never knew any other way. So I don't see it as a challenge per se. I know what my limitations are, or I know what my strengths are. So, for example, because I'm missing my right hand and it's not as long as my left one, I don't want to finish a race on my right hand because it's going to cost me time. And so I adapt for that in the water to make sure I'm extending my left arm to the wall instead of my right, things like that. But I've seen people that are missing both arms that are exceptional kickers, and they make up for that in that regard. And so if anything, it almost can be an advantage too, because you instantly know what your strengths are and you are going to maximize those. Whereas I would say maybe someone that is not with a disability might lose sight of focusing on those strengths in the same way because they don't have to compensate for something.
Is there a moment in your competition that you cherish, a memory from all the competitions you've been in that really stands out to you?
I would say the moment when I broke the American record. It took me quite a while to get that. I had gotten back in the water after a break and was 1/10 of a second from the American record, but then it took me almost a full year to break it. And so I was really chasing after that. And when I did, I was kind of surprised by it at first. I wasn't expecting to do it. But not only that, when they came to interview me, they said, how does it feel to break the Pan American record? And I go, Pan American? I just thought I broke the American record. Well, I broke the American and the Pan American record at the same time without even realizing it, and then ended up holding it for another 8 years after that.
Jacob, what about you? What are your fond memories from competing in the Paralympics?
I think my best memories are really, it's kind of tied into a lot of the work I do now. I work for a company called School Aid, and we teach kids every day about wheelchair basketball and about the Paralympics. And really, the idea is just to kind of pay all the things I got out of the Paralympics, pay it forward a little bit, and help kids in Cincinnati kind of learn about the movement. And then as far as the games go, I had some great teammates. Seeing those guys, even now when I see them and kind of hanging out, some of the friendships I've made have probably been, you know, my best memories of the games.
Tell us a little bit about the Dragons.
Yeah, also I coach a kids' wheelchair basketball team. And a lot of that, you know, being a Paralympian helps me so much coaching young people. Anybody out there is listening has been a coach. Sometimes your players definitely know more than you, or at least think they do. So I can always pull out the Paralympic card on them if I need to. And just kind of ask them, like, all right, who on this basketball court's been in the Paralympics? I have, so you need to listen. But we have some great young players in Cincinnati that are really learning the game, and hopefully years to come we have some more Paralympians from Cincinnati.
What ages are you working with in the Dragons program?
We have a 13 and under team that's been established for the last 2 years, and then this coming basketball season we'll introduce a 18 and under team. So it'll be a big step to get the middle school and high school kids playing.
We will continue our conversation about the Paralympics and the crash reel. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and joining us with a look at the Paralympics and the crash reel are two local Paralympians, April Curley, who swam in the 2008 Paralympic Summer Games, and the founder of Cincinnati Dragons wheelchair basketball, Jacob Counts, who competed in the 2008 Paralympics on the U.S. National Wheelchair Basketball Team. Also, Dr. Ope Adeoye, who is with UC Health. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jacob, how heartwarming is it for you to get to work with the kids that you do in the Dragons program?
I enjoy it quite a bit. It's probably, for me, it's one of the most meaningful things I've done in my athletic career. And I think the reason is I've had so many opportunities to, you know, not only play in the Paralympics, but live abroad, compete abroad, meet other amazing athletes from around the world, that when I came back home to the Cincinnati area, just the idea of paying that forward, and hopefully we get some of our youngsters in Cincinnati to have those same opportunities. Or at the least, find that they can pick a sport and try to excel at it. I always tell my players, like, you have to try to become as good as you can be. You know, not compare yourself to other people, but become as good as you can be. And I think that's something they take to heart, and they like the challenge. So,
now, both you and April have been involved with the Real Abilities Film Festival in the past. How did you get involved with the event?
I first got involved on the education side. There's Real Education, which the job is to go out and educate people about the festival and also about disabilities. The company School Aid I worked for, we were already doing a lot of that work, so it kind of made a pretty natural partnership that we should join up. And then once I started meeting the people that worked with Real Abilities, we have a ton of fun. I really liked the message of the film festival, and I've been able to watch some pretty amazing films the last couple of years as well.
Hey, April, how did you get involved with Real Abilities?
So when it first came to Cincinnati back in 2011 with the JCC Marison, I got involved because one of the films that they were sharing was called Warrior Champions, which was about four Iraqi war veterans that had come back with disabilities, and they now were taking their journey on to compete in the Paralympics. And one of them was my teammate, Melissa Stockwell, who went on to swim with me in 2008 in Beijing and has actually also now qualified for Rio in paratriathlon. And so through that journey back in 2008, they did this documentary. And so I was a part of the talk back for that and then carried that forward. And so that was my initial how I got involved in the program initially, and that just kind of morphed into a more substantial role working with the Veterans Committee for the 2015 festival, and now kind of working with some of the local short stories coming into this next festival for 2017.
What kind of impact do you think an event like this has had on the community?
I really like that it is creating more of a community dialogue beyond just what is considered like the disability community, meaning people that either have disabilities or families with people with disabilities. It's starting to expand beyond that. And with these films, they're kind of getting a glimpse of what someone that is experiencing disabilities life is like in a way that allows them to feel like they can address the questions that they have without asking and feeling uncomfortable or awkward. And so I think it's just becoming more mainstream that we're talking about disabilities as a part of our community, and that it's not a separate us versus them. It's all of us together.
And Jacob, what are your thoughts on the impact of an event like Real Abilities in the film festival?
I think it has a huge impact just in the fact that a lot of the movies show individual that has a disability in a light that we can all relate to. I think a lot of times one of the things I tell kids is if we just look at each other, you see way more differences. But if you get to know somebody, you're going to find that just about anybody you meet, you're going to have way more in common with that person. And I think the films and the festival in general helps to push that along quite a bit.
Yeah, and speaking of films, there's a screening on July 28th, and this is for the movie The Crash Reel. And this is dramatic. It tells the story of U.S. snowboarding champion Kevin Pierce. Had a terrible accident in competition that resulted in him having a traumatic brain injury. And I understand that he was here in Cincinnati for that 2015 film festival. April, did you get a chance to meet Kevin?
I did, in fact. He came to the VIP event leading up to the his film screening, and he was at his film screening to just be able to kind of talk to him and hear about his experience both as an athlete but also having experienced an injury and now his advocacy beyond that about traumatic brain injury and prevention with helmets and things like that, safety, that help kind of the whole community of snowboarders and sports like that become more aware of how they can best protect themselves and still enjoy their sport.
And what amazes me about the whole thing is that even after this horrible accident and this horrible injury, he still wants to go back to snowboarding.
Sure.
I mean, is that kind of the mentality of an athlete?
Absolutely. I can share, too, that I broke my foot once training, and my orthopedic surgeon said, you know, you can't go and compete with your foot, or you might need a screw put in. And I was like, you know what? If my teammates can do it without a leg, then I will hop off the block with one leg and still swim my race. And that's what I did. And the point being is that while if it were life-threatening, I think that's a different circumstance altogether. But and I'm in no way comparing my broken foot to obviously a traumatic brain injury, but I can understand the mentality of not wanting to give up the sport you love or the thing that you love. And so you go to great lengths to try and make accommodations that still allow you to have some way to stay involved with it, which is what Kevin has done. He continues to snowboard, but not necessarily compete in a dangerous way.
Mm-hmm. Ope, what exactly is traumatic brain injury?
Well, first, thank you very much for having me, Mark. And I should say that, you know, sitting here between these two makes me feel very small.
Me too.
Don't be.
Well, one thing I can say, my admiration has grown greatly for both these folks.
Yeah. So, you know, traumatic brain injury, the question as you phrase it is interesting because from a purely medical point of view, there really is a question as to what is traumatic brain injury. There's quite the range of diseases that we're talking about. So I think there's been a fair amount of attention to concussions lately. So what we would previously describe as somebody getting rung, but they otherwise get up and seem fine. And the traumatic brain injuries range from that sort of a disease process all the way through what we do in the hospital, in as much as somebody ends up in the emergency department, perhaps needs to transition to the ICU and stays in the ICU for protracted periods of time, recovering and getting to the point whereby they may be able to breathe on their own or may be able to eat on their own, not to talk about walking and moving around and those sorts of things. So the definition of a traumatic brain injury really, it's pretty broad. It refers to impact on the head that is associated with some transient or sometimes permanent loss of consciousness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and so what we're talking about in Kevin Pierce's case sounds like it was a pretty severe traumatic brain injury that he was dealing with.
Yes, so that his the broad classifications, which, again, the experts in this, and we actually are conducting a study at UC that's led by UCSF, a study called TRAC-TBI, where we're trying to collect every stripe of a traumatic brain injury and then trying to actually describe how different people do. As you might imagine, the person who, even within the concussion realm, the person who falls and hits the head, gets up and seems okay but isn't quite right, is very different from the person whose head was hit by somebody's knee or something along those lines. So it's a pretty heterogeneous disease process is the bottom line. And so when Kevin fell off as he went up into the air, which is clear in this trailer that's available online for the movie, and I'd seen that before on different media also. But when he falls and the impact of that as he hits his head, he's going to suffer a certain injury as a consequence of that impact that will be very different from the injury one suffers in a car accident, for instance. And so all that makes it, again, a very heterogeneous disease process. But certainly for people who are in the ICU, not breathing on their own, and on ventilators, that typically connotes a severe traumatic brain injury.
Does it necessarily have to be related to some kind of an open head injury, or can TBI occur from something else?
Absolutely not in terms of open head injury as evidenced by the concussion. So just to speak briefly to what we would otherwise, and there's a lot of quibbling on this terminology. We have mild, moderate, severe. And for the people who have quote-unquote mild traumatic brain injury, who aren't back at work 6 months later, who aren't functioning independently, who don't feel quite right, who now suffer what we, I think, are all familiar with as PTSD in some capacity, I don't think those people would describe the disease as mild, even though they're not in the ICU, even though they're not, they're able to walk and able to talk and able to eat and feed themselves. Certainly the impact on functionality makes it such that we wouldn't want that classified as mild if we were experiencing the troubles those people go through sometimes.
Is there some way to avoid or reduce the risk of TBI?
So the best thing, in general, TBI results as a consequence of an accident of some sort, right? So if you were to think about it broadly in terms of how to prevent TBI, it's the processes that go into preventing accidents in general. So adequate training, adequate preparation, mitigating the circumstance that you find yourself in is broadly the approach that one would take to preventing traumatic brain injuries.
Mm-hmm. Well, April, Ope, and Jacob, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
April Curley, who swam in the 2008 Paralympic Summer Games, and the founder of the Cincinnati Dragons wheelchair basketball, Jacob Counts, who competed in the 2008 Paralympics on the U.S. National Wheelchair Basketball Team. Also, Dr. Ope Adeoye with UC Health. You can find a link to more information about Real Abilities and the July 28th showing of The Crash Reel at WVXU.org. Coming up, how a partnership between Melodic Connections and Everybody is a Star is touching the lives of local musicians with developmental disabilities. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.